Вариант 17.
Сейчас вы будете выполнять задание по аудированию. Каждый текст прозвучит два раза. После первого и второго прослушивания у вас будет время для выполнения и проверки заданий. Все паузы включены в аудиозапись. Остановка и повторное воспроизведение аудиозаписи не предусмотрены. По окончании выполнения всего раздела «Аудирование» перенесите свои ответы в бланк ответов номер один. Задание 1. Вы услышите 6 высказываний. Установите соответствие между высказываниями каждого говорящего «AF» и утверждениями, данными в списке 1-7. Используйте каждое утверждение, обозначенное соответствующей цифрой, только один раз. В задании есть одно лишнее утверждение. Вы услышите запись дважды. Занесите свои ответы в таблицу. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданием.
Now we are ready to start. Speaker A.
I've learnt from first-hand experience what winter is like. I've seen places I've heard of or learnt about at school, places I've read about in books or seen in the movies. Now I know what it's like to travel by air, sea, rail, and of course by road. I can say I've interacted with people in Europe, Asia, North America, South America, and in the Middle East. I have tried their cuisine, and I have seen all the wonders of the world. And I would say that traveling helped me gain new experience and lots of knowledge about the world we live in.
Speaker B.
Lots of people believe that travel broadens the mind. In fact, it can sometimes confirm people in their own prejudices. A friend of mine went to Cyprus, and when he came back, he complained bitterly that he could not find English food, and everything was so foreign. If one travels with that kind of attitude, small wonder one never learns anything about other places and people. Today, many people travel not in order to learn or broaden their mind, but to have a good time, and usually on their terms. I think travel can broaden the mind, but only when there's room in it to expand.
Speaker C.
I've just got back from a trip to Japan, and what I learned by just being there is more than I've ever learned on the internet. There are so many opinions, and I found that whatever people had to say about Japan was radically different from my own experience there. Talking to some locals, I learned more than school or internet could teach me. Travel lets you see other people's lives, cultures, customs, and traditions from different parts of the world. Travel educates you and makes you knowledgeable. I think that people who never leave their countries are narrow-minded and ignorant.
Speaker D.
I don't feel the need to travel anywhere as much as I did when I lived in Europe. Canada has a lot of the things I'm looking for. Beautiful scenery, quiet places, no beaches full of people with horrible accents demanding fish and chips, nice weather in the summer. I don't like hot places, so there isn't really anything I'm missing. I love my house, and I don't like leaving. Seriously, I love lying on the sofa. My life's pretty full these days. So when I have the chance to do nothing but lie around with the hounds, I'm as happy as a clam.
Speaker E.
I feel sad for those people who have never travelled outside their own hometown. There's a whole world of different cultures to meet out there, 99% of which you can't have by just sitting in the living room in front of the TV. When you travel to other countries, you can see, feel, and touch other ways of living. Some places will shock you, others will please you, but you will never be untouched by experiencing other cultures. You will then appreciate your own life and see things in a different way. You learn and start thinking, and perhaps it will change you forever.
Speaker F.
I've been lucky enough to work all around the world, and I have to say it has enlightened me in so many ways. The thing for me is that you have to meet people. Why travel if you're just going to hang out with the same people? For me, Learning how other people think, what they do, what's important for them, and how they live is the mind-expanding side of travel that I enjoy. It's useful because it puts into question all of the habits and beliefs that you take for granted, and shows us that all lifestyles and points of view are equally valid.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now you will hear the texts again. Speaker A.
I've learnt from first-hand experience what winter is like. I've seen places I've heard of or learnt about at school, places I've read about in books or seen in the movies. Now I know what it's like to travel by air, sea, rail, and of course by road. I can say I've interacted with people in Europe, Asia, North America, South America, and in the Middle East. I have tried their cuisine and I have seen all the wonders of the world. And I would say that traveling helped me gain new experience and lots of knowledge about the world we live in.
Speaker B.
Lots of people believe that travel broadens the mind. In fact, it can sometimes confirm people in their own prejudices. A friend of mine went to Cyprus, and when he came back, he complained bitterly that he could not find English food and everything was so foreign. If one travels with that kind of attitude, small wonder one never learns anything about other places and people. Today, many people travel not in order to learn or broaden their mind, but to have a good time, and usually on their terms. I think travel can broaden the mind, but only when there's room in it to expand.
Speaker C.
I've just got back from a trip to Japan, and what I learned by just being there is more than I've ever learned on the internet. There are so many opinions, and I found that whatever people had to say about Japan was radically different from my own experience there. Talking to some locals, I learned more than school or internet could teach me. Travel lets you see other people's lives, cultures, customs, and traditions from different parts of the world. Travel educates you and makes you knowledgeable. I think that people who never leave their countries are narrow-minded and ignorant.
Speaker D.
I don't feel the need to travel anywhere as much as I did when I lived in Europe. Canada has a lot of the things I'm looking for. Beautiful scenery, quiet places, no beaches full of people with horrible accents demanding fish and chips, nice weather in the summer. I don't like hot places, so there isn't really anything I'm missing. I love my house and I don't like leaving. Seriously, I love lying on the sofa. My life's pretty full these days. So when I have the chance to do nothing but lie around with the hounds, I'm as happy as a clam.
Speaker E.
I feel sad for those people who have never travelled outside their own hometown. There's a whole world of different cultures to meet out there, 99% of which you can't have by just sitting in the living room in front of the TV. When you travel to other countries, you can see, feel, and touch other ways of living. Some places will shock you. Others will please you, but you will never be untouched by experiencing other cultures. You will then appreciate your own life and see things in a different way. You learn and start thinking, and perhaps it will change you forever.
Speaker F.
I've been lucky enough to work all around the world, and I have to say it has enlightened me in so many ways. The thing for me is that you have to meet people. Why travel if you're just going to hang out with the same people? For me, learning how other people think, what they do, what's important for them, and how they live is the mind-expanding side of travel that I enjoy. It's useful because it puts into question all of the habits and beliefs that you take for granted, and shows us that all lifestyles and points of view are equally valid.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers.
Задание 2. Вы услышите диалог. Определите, какие из приведенных утверждений A-G соответствуют содержанию текста. 1. True. Какие не соответствуют? 2. False. И о чем в тексте не сказано? То есть на основании текста нельзя дать ни положительного, ни отрицательного ответа. 3. Not stated. Занесите номер выбранного вами варианта ответа в таблицу. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданиями.
Now we are ready to start.
Hi, Jerry. The school year is almost over. Do you have any plans for the summer holiday?
I'm planning on sleeping all day, every day.
Oh, come on, Jerry. You must be kidding.
Yeah, Emily, I'm just pulling your leg. Actually, I'm planning to go to the Lake District.
Really? Why would you like to go there? It's not a very popular tourist destination.
Exactly. It's not very popular, so it won't be too crowded. I enjoyed my trip to Spain, but there were so many people there. I think it spoiled the atmosphere a bit.
I'm sure the Lake District won't be so crowded. I wouldn't mind getting away from the crowds myself. Still, I wonder, is there anything worth seeing in the Lake District?
Sure, for one thing, this region boasts beautiful natural scenery. I'm sure you've heard of the Aerofoss waterfalls, mentioned in Wordsworth's poems. There's also the Dungeon Gilfoss, which is said to be spectacular. And you can admire attractive mountains everywhere, for example, Helvellyn.
Yes, I've heard of Helvellyn. But won't you get bored just looking at the scenery?
Come on, Emily, there are lots of other things to do. I can go hiking in the Lake District, visit famous Hadrian's Wall and Hardknott Roman Fort. And I know you've heard of Carlisle, a historical city which is well known for its castle.
Hi. When you describe it like that, it sounds really interesting.
And that's not all. I'll be able to try a real shepherd's pie made with local lamb in rich gravy topped with creamy mash, or a delicious fish pie made with salmon, cod or haddock from the North Sea.
Do you have a place to stay in the Lake District?
Yes, I'm very lucky. My friend's sister is the manager of the Western Cumbria Park Hotel, the best hotel in Carlisle. I've seen some pictures on the internet. It's really nice. But I think outside Carlisle, I'll stay in a self-catering cottage or perhaps buy a tent and go camping.
That's great, Jerry. I'm looking forward to seeing your photos when you get back.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now, you will hear the text again.
Hi, Jerry. The school year is almost over. Do you have any plans for the summer holiday?
I'm planning on sleeping all day, every day.
Oh, come on, Jerry. You must be kidding.
Yeah, Emily, I'm just pulling your leg. Actually, I'm planning to go to the Lake District.
Really? Why would you like to go there? It's not a very popular tourist destination.
Exactly. It's not very popular, so it won't be too crowded. I enjoyed my trip to Spain, but there were so many people there. I think it spoiled the atmosphere a bit.
I'm sure the Lake District won't be so crowded. I wouldn't mind getting away from the crowds myself. Still, I wonder, is there anything worth seeing in the Lake District?
Sure, for one thing, this region boasts beautiful natural scenery. I'm sure you've heard of the Aerofoss waterfalls, mentioned in Wordsworth's poems. There's also the Dungeon Gilfoss, which is said to be spectacular. And you can admire attractive mountains everywhere, for example, Helvellyn.
Yes, I've heard of Helvellyn. But won't you get bored just looking at the scenery?
Come on, Emily, there are lots of other things to do. I can go hiking in the Lake District, visit famous Hadrian's Wall and Hardknott Roman Fort. And I know you've heard of Carlisle, a historical city which is well known for its castle.
Hi. When you describe it like that, it sounds really interesting.
And that's not all. I'll be able to try a real shepherd's pie made with local lamb in rich gravy topped with creamy mash, or a delicious fish pie made with salmon, cod or haddock from the North Sea.
Do you have a place to stay in the Lake District?
Yes, I'm very lucky. My friend's sister is the manager of the Western Cumbria Park Hotel, the best hotel in Carlisle. I've seen some pictures on the internet. It's really nice. But I think outside Carlisle, I'll stay in a self-catering cottage or perhaps buy a tent and go camping.
That's great, Sherry. I'm looking forward to seeing your photos when you get back.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers.
Задание 3.9. Вы услышите рассказ бейсбольного болельщика. В заданиях 3.9 запишите в поле ответа цифру 1, 2 или 3, соответствующую выбранному вами варианту ответа. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 50 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданиями.
Now we are ready to start.
There is a lot of whining in baseball, at least among baseball fans. For as long as I can remember, I've been told the game isn't as good as it used to be. Still, you could have seen Game 3 of the World Series that year for $4, which brings me to my point. When did going to a Major League Baseball game become more expensive than going to the opera? Don't get me wrong, I like the trend in new ballparks, which began with the opening of the Camden Yards in 1992. I appreciate the padded seats and the unobstructed views, the variety of food. I used to go to Giants' old home, Candlestick Park, which was so cold and miserable that they tried to market fan endurance. The new Giants' home is paradise in comparison, and it is relatively affordable. My brother and I went to see a game there in May, and our lower box seats cost $42. A steal compared with the LA Dodgers, $285 VIP seats, and the average $73 Yankee ticket. Average. That's a 100% increase over last year's Yankee ticket average, and the most expensive seats, directly behind home plate, were priced at $2,000. That was not the price for the season, or a month, or even a week. That was the price per seat, per game. For that kind of money, they should let you choose the batting order. Instead, all you get is free braised short ribs with fresh watercress. When I visited the new stadium this summer to see the Yanks host Toronto with my pal Steve, I purchased two seats for a total of $240. They were on the third level, above home plate, a great vantage point from which to see the game, but not the one where you are likely to catch any foul balls. The new Yankee Stadium looks a lot like the old Yankee Stadium from the outside, and you don't have to rely on your memory to make that comparison. The original sits right across the street while they tear it down in slow motion. Sure, the old stadium was about as welcoming as JFK Airport and as confusing as Penn Station, but you could see the field pretty well, no matter where you were. The seats were uncomfortable, but if you wanted comfort, you could stay at home and watch the game on TV. In the new stadium, you feel as if you are watching the game on TV. There are 1,400 screens and one LCD giant that's 6 times bigger than the former stadium's Jumbotron. All the better, it seems, to broadcast animated figures telling you when it's time to make noise. Honestly, the velvet rope treatment is my biggest complaint. It just seems ill-timed. When the team set out to build its new stadium, it was counting on Wall Street's former masters of the universe to be putting their feet up on those $2,000 front row seats. But now those same masters are building their resumes at home, and it's embarrassing to televise games with empty front row seats. So twice during the game, giant screens announced promotional upgrades in which lucky fans were picked out of the cheap seats and ushered into the luxury area. But what were the Yankees thinking in the first place? When did baseball become a rich man's game? What happened to the game a kid could afford by working a paper route, with a dream of catching a game-winning home run ball? These days, that kid wouldn't stand a chance. He could never sneak in. He certainly couldn't buy his own ticket. Nor could he get anywhere near the players, as the now discounted dugout seats where the fans used to plead for autographs during batting practice are still $1,000. Steve and I had a great time at the game that day. Burnett pitched 7 excellent innings. The Yankees won 4-2. But as I left the stadium, I thought about the long-term effects of excluding the majority of baseball fans from the experience of watching the game live.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now, you will hear the text again.
There is a lot of whining in baseball, at least among baseball fans. For as long as I can remember, I've been told the game isn't as good as it used to be. Still, you could have seen Game 3 of the World Series that year for $4, which brings me to my point. When did going to a Major League Baseball game become more expensive than going to the opera? Don't get me wrong, I like the trend in new ballparks, which began with the opening of the Camden Yards in 1992. I appreciate the padded seats and the unobstructed views, the variety of food. I used to go to Giants' old home, Candlestick Park, which was so cold and miserable that they tried to market fan endurance. The new Giants home is paradise in comparison, and it is relatively affordable. My brother and I went to see a game there in May, and our lower box seats cost $42. A steal compared with the LA Dodgers, $285 VIP seats, and the average $73 Yankee ticket. Average, that's a 100% increase over last year's Yankee ticket average, and the most expensive seats, directly behind home plate, were priced at $2,000. That was not the price for the season, or a month, or even a week. That was the price per seat, per game. For that kind of money, they should let you choose the batting order. Instead, all you get is free braised short ribs with fresh watercress. When I visited the new stadium this summer to see the Yanks host Toronto with my pal Steve, I purchased 2 seats for a total of $240. They were on the 3rd level, above home plate, a great vantage point from which to see the game, but not the one where you are likely to catch any foul balls. The new Yankee Stadium looks a lot like the old Yankee Stadium from the outside, and you don't have to rely on your memory to make that comparison. The original sits right across the street while they tear it down in slow motion. Sure, the old stadium was about as welcoming as JFK Airport and as confusing as Penn Station, but you could see the field pretty well, no matter where you were. The seats were uncomfortable, but if you wanted comfort, you could stay at home and watch the game on TV. In the new stadium, you feel as if you are watching the game on TV. There are 1,400 screens and one LCD giant that's 6 times bigger than the former stadium's Jumbotron. All the better, it seems, to broadcast animated figures telling you when it's time to make noise. Honestly, the velvet rope treatment is my biggest complaint. It just seems ill-timed. When the team set out to build its new stadium, it was counting on Wall Street's former masters of the universe to be putting their feet up on those $2,000 front row seats. But now those same masters are building their resumes at home, and it's embarrassing to televise games with empty front row seats. So twice during the game, giant screens announced promotional upgrades in which lucky fans were picked out of the cheap seats and ushered into the luxury area. But what were the Yankees thinking in the first place? When did baseball become a rich man's game? What happened to the game a kid could afford by working a paper route, with a dream of catching a game-winning home run ball? These days, that kid wouldn't stand a chance. He could never sneak in. He certainly couldn't buy his own ticket, nor could he get anywhere near the players, as the now discounted dugout seats where the fans used to plead for autographs during batting practice are still $1,000. Steve and I had a great time at the game that day. Burnett pitched 7 excellent innings. The Yankees won 4-2, but as I left the stadium, I thought about the long-term effects of excluding the majority of baseball fans from the experience of watching the game live.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test.
Время, отведенное на выполнение заданий, истекло.